This is MergerCast by Strategy And, a podcast exploring the world of mergers, acquisitions, and restructurings. Strategy And, part of the PwC network.
Welcome to MergerCast. I'm Jane Searle. Today we're discussing how winning companies take practical steps to close the gap between strategy and execution. We'll look at how these relate to choices about M&A and likely results for companies that follow this path. Discussing this topic with me is Jay Neely and Paul Leinwand, both principals with Strategy And, while Paul is also co-author of Strategy That Works. Now, Paul, Strategy That Works focuses on closing the elusive strategy to execution gap. Can you tell us why that is so difficult?
Well, we really see that executives and CEOs are struggling on the topic of value creation and strategy. In fact, in a recent study, over 50% of senior executives do not believe they have a winning strategy, and over two-thirds do not believe they have the capabilities to execute the strategy that they do have. In fact, there are many traps that we see executives sort of stuck in, trying to follow good advice and conventional wisdom like growth. Obviously a very important thing in business, but if all you're doing is focusing on growth, you're often not focusing on your advantage. Pursuing functional excellence, you know, a very worthwhile cause, but unfortunately we typically don't have the budget or the time to become great at everything, and therefore we wind up being sort of good or maybe okay at many things and not really building that advantage we need. Reorganization, I mean, that's something that many companies do to provide greater accountability, but often we get stuck in reorganizations that take us away from the important issues of competitive advantage. On the topic of cost, a lot of the conventional wisdom is to go lean, and often companies wait until they need to take out costs, but unfortunately this makes them generally quite weaker. And then the last piece of conventional wisdom around agility, and we hear a lot about this today, trying to forecast trends, trying to understand how to move an organization, but large companies actually find it quite difficult to just pick up where they are and move to a new place. And so a lot of conventional wisdom out there that is leading us to some pretty bad outcomes.
And Strategy That Works suggests that there are five acts required to close this gap. Can you tell us more about each?
And exactly, against those conventional areas, if you will, the conventional wisdom that's out there, we have five acts of unconventional leadership that we learn from the 14 companies in this research that was published in the book. And these are companies like IKEA and Amazon and IKEA and Hire and Cemex and Natura. And we talked about growth, but these companies actually say what they do is they commit to an identity. They're really looking to build advantage. They know that with advantage comes growth rather than growth as sort of the first objective. Instead of building functional excellence, they're translating the strategic into the everyday. They're building those few capabilities that really matter, the capabilities that actually help enable the promise that they're making to customers. Instead of focusing on organization, they focus on culture. They talk about the fact that culture is so important to enabling the strategy, to building those capabilities, to actually spanning those functional boundaries which great capabilities require. Instead of going lean, these companies talk about cut costs to grow stronger or becoming fit for growth, essentially making sure that they're always looking at the topic of cost, that they're always finding ways to take money out of some places and put it into those few important capabilities that we talked about before. And finally, instead of becoming agile, these companies talk about shaping their own future, actually creating demand and making sure they're improving their own capabilities, staying in front of the market rather than waiting for the market to happen.
So, Jay, how would these relate to choices about M&A?
M&A can be a powerful tool in realizing the goals of the five acts that Paul just talked about, and they can really actually help drive focus for the M&A agenda. And so, for example, if you start with identity, it can really help to add clarity to what business you will be in and what capabilities are needed to support it and how you're going to face the market. And then that kind of clarity actually helps quite a bit with defining what belongs in the portfolio and perhaps what may not, and where there really are gaps to fill. And then from there, you can make choices about, you know, what you might build yourself or what you might accelerate through M&A and a buy approach. We certainly see that companies with a high awareness of their capability systems and how it relates to M&A tend to drive much, much better returns in M&A. We've done this look at what we call capabilities premium in M&A a number of times now, and most recently published the survey again in an article called Deals That Win in Strategy and Business. And what we found was that across, you know, multiple industries, companies that leverage their capability system in an M&A situation or actively use acquisitions to enhance their capability system in a very specific way, generate much greater returns than those who don't leverage or enhance capabilities through M&A. The difference in shareholder value return we see is something in the range of 14 points of compound annual growth. So it's quite a significant difference. And we've seen this over multiple cycles of this study. So really bringing this all together, M&A is can be a meaningful driver of how a company shapes its future in the context of strategy and gets there faster. And in some ways, M&A can be a major driver of it. You can see companies like Danaher, which has done hundreds and hundreds of acquisitions over several decades, generating tremendous shareholder returns. And almost every one of those deals traces back to a real articulation of how they leverage the Danaher business system to drive performance improvement of assets they pick up. And then more recently, you actually saw them use the same kind of thought process and choosing to separate the company into two different types of businesses as they had sort of really grown up and, had something that was much more focused on sort of, health, life sciences, and something that was also much more focused on industrial, each with probably differences in their capability systems. And it actually made sense, they'd grown both to such a size to put them into two separate businesses so they can continue to thrive.
And finally, what types of results do you see for companies that follow this path?
This is obviously something that when we did the research for the companies behind the book, Strategy That Works, we looked very specifically into companies that, had quite significant performance over the years. But it's important to note that this idea of capabilities, and as Jay talked about the results from, M&A, we've been doing research on this for over a decade and looked at thousands of companies. In fact, companies that have this idea of a promise that they're making to customers, we call that a way to play or a value proposition, and back it up with those few capabilities, are 3x more likely to grow faster and 2x more likely to grow their profits actually quite a bit stronger than their peers. And so it is quite a successful path, but it does require that idea of coherence. You've got to match up where your destiny is, where your aspiration is, and the capabilities you're building every single day, and you've got to do everything around it. And that's why these five unconventional acts, they work together. You've got to build capabilities. You've got to think about cost in the right way. You've got to think about your culture. You've got to make sure that you're focusing your future around your identity, improving where you are. And so that's really an important part of succeeding on this type of path.
And when I think about the M&A component of this, beyond some of the financial results I had talked about, you just sort of start from a better thesis of what your M&A agenda might be, and it becomes a huge resource saver. One of the most important things it can start to do is help define for you, places where you should play and places where you should pass. And I've had a number of clients where when you get that kind of clarity about the role of the portfolio, what stays, what goes, but more importantly, what they might bid for, sometimes it's just as valuable to sort of know that when something comes up that it's not on strategy for you and that you're not going to go spend the time and energy to pursue it, you're going to keep your powder dry, and then when something better comes along, you're ready to act on it. And we've seen that time and time again, that sort of getting this identity clear and understanding sort of the capability systems and how it plays, and then knowing how in an M&A kind of situation you would exploit that, really sort of sets you up to be an advantaged bidder, in situations where it truly is not a strategy target for you.
Okay, thank you, Jay. That concludes our episode of MergerCast. Thank you to our guests Jay Neely and Paul Leinwand. And thank you for listening to MergerCast by Strategy And, as we explore the world of mergers, acquisitions, and restructures.
This has been MergerCast by Strategy And. For more information on Strategy And's service offerings in mergers and restructurings, please visit strategyand.pwc.com/mergers. Strategy And, part of the PwC network.